This is TV Podcast Industries, and we're talking about The Bad Batch, Season 3, Episode 12, Juggernaut.
Emery, you don't have to do this.
I'm sorry, but I do. For what it's worth, I'm glad you're safe.
Am I?
Welcome back to TV Podcast Industries, and we're talking about The Bad Batch, Season 3, Episode 12, Juggernaut. I am one of your hosts, Chris. I don't sound like Chris, but I am Chris, I swear to you. I am joined by my illustrious co-hosts from a different galaxy far, far away. Yes, boys, please take over so I can cough.
Yes, hello there, fellow Batchers. Yes. Who is our sexy new podcast host with his gravelly voice? I don't know, maybe it sounds like Wrecker. I don't know.
You know, it's interesting. I was thinking earlier on, the Bad Batch now with Omega captured just consists of three members. So it is the three of us, I guess. I'm Hunter, you're Crosshair, and now Chris is definitely, definitely Wrecker, right?
I'm the one with PTSD. Well, that's true after doing
I would say you're the laser-focused one. That can hit a target from a far distance.
Not anymore. Oh no, it's an allegory for my general demise.
You have a shaky hand as well, yes.
Well, yes. Quite, but I'm one of your hosts, John.
And I'm your other host, Derek. Welcome back. We are in the last month of the Bad Batch coverage. We've got just three more episodes to go after this one, so we are in the last month of weekly coverage of Bad Batch.
Yeah.
That's kind of snuck up on me.
Yeah, that has come around very quickly, actually. Yeah.
I feel it's both snuck up as well as also overstayed some of its welcome in that it feels like this series, this season has gone on really, really long. But at the same time, I'm feeling like, oh no, but like I keep going. Just don't end. It's fine. Just like we just keep going. I will continue with these like 17 to 20 minute episodes a week for forever.
Yeah.
Don't need to end it at the end of this. It's fine.
Exactly.
It's okay. I get to catch up in weekly beans. It's fine.
Yeah, exactly. It's because we're covering shows that are only six episodes long. We're covering Shogun, which is 10 episodes, but of course, we had the really interesting one with Invincible, where we had four episodes last year, four episodes this year, and they make up one full season. So it feels like we covered Invincible really fast. And it feels like we've been covering Shogun pretty fast. And then we have these 15 episodes for The Bad Batch. But it's been great spending time with The Bad Batch. It feels like our regular little hangout each week, which is cool.
Yeah, no, it's always good fun.
Yeah, I mean, it's been really good fun. I really enjoy The Bad Batch. I mean, you say it like that and you go, okay, there's only three episodes left. Yeah. So it's not that many. And like you say, it's kind of crept up really. Mm. So notwithstanding Tales of the Empire, I can't wait for the next kind of Star Wars animated project. It kind of in the style of this, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Assuming there is one.
Let's hope so.
Agreed. And I know that we do have the Tales of the Empire coming. I'm very interested to see what the hell that's about. I'm barely any information aside from the name, and I'm kind of like, is this essentially just like, here's six tales of the dark side of all the bad guys? Here's what Thrawn did on spring break on Coruscant. Is it gonna, did he get up to dirty, debaucherous deeds? No, he's Thrawn. He's a bad guy. He killed a couple of people and masterminded some conspiracy.
Do you want to know a little more about it, Chris?
Yeah, go.
Because we had Tales of the Jedi last season, which was some tales of Ahsoka Tano and some tales of Count Dooku. This time it's the tales of Barriss Offee, and it's tales about Morgan Elspeth, who we saw in the live action Ahsoka series and The Mandalorians. Three tales about her and three tales about Barriss Offee. So that's the way they're doing it this time. So you're right, though. We will see a little bit of Grand Admiral Thrawn in there. He is confirmed. He's in the trailer. But that's the focus, those two characters for the six episodes of the show. So that should be pretty exciting. Yeah. Now, the shorts, they're like 6 to 7 minutes each one. So like the Tales of the Jedi. So we're hoping that we'll be able to cover it within the podcast.
Nice.
Yeah. Be good.
Let's wait and see.
Yeah.
Cool. But then, gentlemen, let's get on to our discussion of a very shorter than usual episode of The Bad Batch as we go into our final stint of the season. Episode 12, Juggernaut. Derek, do you want to tell us who gave us what, where, when, and how with this episode details?
Absolutely. Executive producers for the show, of course, are Brad Rao and Jennifer Corbett. This episode was written by Ezra Nachman. This is the third episode of the series that Ezra Nachman's written after The Clone Conspiracy in Season 2, which was Season 2, Episode 7. And Episode 4 of this season, A Different Approach. Remember the one where Omega and Crosshair crash land and have to escape from the planet on their own? That was Ezra Nachman as well.
Very good.
Quite cool. Quite cool. Director of this episode is Stuart Lee, who's directed loads of these episodes. And Matt Miktavis, of course, is the story editor for the show overall. John, do you want to tell us what they gave us with your synopsis for The Bad Batch 312 Juggernaut?
Sure. Omega is returned to Tantis Base for immediate testing by Dr. Emery Carr, while the Bad Batch are left on Pabu. Crosshair has one last option to find the Tantis Base. The disgraced Admiral Rampart, who is being held at the Imperial Labour Camp on Erebus, he was the one who sent Nala Se to Tantis and knows its location. Enlisting the help of Fi Genoa, the Bad Batch intercept Rampart, but he will only give them the information if they get him off the planet. Following a battle with the Imperial ground forces, they extract Rampart. After leaving the planet, he reveals no one knows the route to Tantis, and that's how it was created. But he might just have a way around that. Meanwhile, back at the Tantis labs, Dr. Carr confirms that Omega is a key part of the solution to Project Necromancer, and Dr. Hemlock brings her to her new permanent home in the vault with the other specimens. Happy holidays, Omega.
Absolutely. Welcome to your new home in the vault behind all of these barriers. Yeah. Thanks so much.
Absolutely. Yeah. Very, very rapid, this episode.
Yeah.
I mean, effectively, in essence, it is Prison Break.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Or The Great Escape.
Or The Great Escape. Well, yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
It is more Prison Break. Oh, well, really, one person being broken out. Yeah.
Oh, I was more going, if she goes Great Escape with a speeder bike over the side of the mountain, I'm down to see that.
There you go.
Yeah, that would be cool.
There you go.
I just don't think Rampart is quite Steve McQueen.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. McQueen never would have had that beard or haircut, no matter how long he spent in prison.
Yeah. He is kind of channeling Luke Skywalker, A New Hope.
That is whiny Luke Skywalker from A New Hope that John is just channeling, trying to channel there on behalf of Rampart.
I didn't want to do my shoes.
But with that, let's get into our blaster point number one. We're going to just take Omega's story in the episode as our blaster point number one. Omega back on Tantis. Do you know what? I loved the opening of this episode. Just as the transport of the operative, as we're still calling the character that we don't know who it is, as the operative arrives back on Tantis with Omega stashed on board. Just thought the music was so oppressive, a really excellent piece of score, because Omega's now been just dragged back to Tantis and dragged back to Dr. Carr and to Dr. Hemlock for testing. It's all doom and gloom, and the whole setting of it as the rain pours and the operative brings her back to Dr. Hemlock. And as he goes, you made the right choice in giving yourself up. I just thought it was a great setting for the episode.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, Jimmy Simpson, who voices Hemlock, is just fantastic because, you know, really, he's not in it that much, but just absolutely love the delivery, love the ominous feeling all the time around seeing Hemlock on screen. And I mean, like, even just the little touches of the operative just, you know, nudging Omega along as Hemlock turns around to take her to Emery Carr to start the testing on her to get this confirmation about the the vintage of her blood.
Hemlock for me, and I mean this in the best possible way, Jimmy Simpson, he's chewing the scenery with this character.
Absolutely.
Like, he's just like the script he's given, he's eating it up, and he's really kind of really given all to what this role is.
Yeah,
definitely. In a fantastic way.
There's kind of a mirroring of Hemlock holding his hand and Crosshair as well in this episode.
Yeah.
And so I'm wondering if the operative could be, you know, like a mongrel hybrid of the two of them. Or even if Hemlock has something much more personal to do with Necromancer because of the nature of him holding his hand and it covered, as well as with Crosshair.
Yeah. We still haven't got that borne out as the season goes on. We've still had loads of theories as to what could be happening under that operative's mask. Yeah, we know the theory that it's tech. We absolutely talked about that before. But the other theory that it could be a clone of Crosshair specifically, and that's why it's impacting him, and then Hemlock also having the same affectation with the hand as Crosshair has. There's something else in that as well that we may see as the season goes on. But I just wanted to mention there is one moment with Hemlock as he brings Omega in and she asks where Nalasay is, because that's who she, of course, expects to be in the lab, not Dr. Carr. And it's just his delivery there that just sounded really like the Emperor's moment with Luke Skywalker at the end of Return of the Jedi, where he says, "You're not going to have any of your friends coming to get you with at this fully operational battle station." Yeah, with the Death Star in Return of the Jedi, it felt similar when Hemlock was going, "Oh, she won't be able to help you escape again." You know, it's that moment where he's kind of rubbing it in her face that he found out exactly who it was that allowed Omega to escape, and she's been punished for it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? Yeah. I kind of do like that as well, where Omega tells Emery, just because we were talking about it last week, about, you know, Emery having that change of heart, or at least you get this sense inwardly that she's questioning her work and what it actually means. And you have Amelia kind of, again, amplifying that, saying to Emery that she doesn't have to do this. And she, you know, she doesn't answer it and just says, "For what it's worth, you know, I'm glad you're safe," effectively. And Amiga just says, "Am I safe?"
Oh, yeah.
Which was really good. I like that. Go, Amiga.
Absolutely, yeah.
I think what they're doing to set up what's happening on Tantus and the Necromancer is some of the most interesting stuff.
Yeah.
In my opinion, this season.
Yeah.
Just kind of how they are. I don't want to call it retconning the sequels.
Yeah.
Like, they're just kind of, they're telling us something that we never knew about what they, now sure, they wrote it after, but that's fine. Anyway.
It's just connecting the story.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
The thing I'm finding most interesting is some of the wording choices that, like, they're trying, like, Hemlock's going around, well, like, the high M count being transferred into subjects is not going well, and we can't make it viable. And I'm like, okay, so I think some of this, the things that they were injecting into Crosshair and into Hemlock themselves is a high M count, and they can't make it through. And this is the side effect of those experiments. Because he kept saying it's degrading the subject. And I think that once they trip, I think that's what we're seeing is Hemlock's experimenting on himself.
Maybe.
And I think we may see that kind of really cool thing at the end.
Like he takes off the glove and he suddenly has an octopus like arm or eight arms hidden underneath.
I was more going like a crinkled, wrinkly old hand. Like,
yeah, I was thinking,
that's cooler.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
I was thinking more Dumbledore, you know, by kind of the Half-Blood Prince.
Yeah. Yeah.
That kind of thing.
God, we're showing our nerddom here.
Yeah, but
we have a podcast about Star Wars animated show. We show it every week, Chris.
I like the fact that, you know, when he brings Omega to the vault, he says, you know, you're the final piece of the puzzle, effectively. So all these kids in the vault have got all their blood and their traits all have a part to play in stabilizing the M count and making it so that it doesn't degrade. So I kind of really like that. Mm-hmm. And again, we get that confirmation from Emery Carr that, you know, the M count results ultimately pass the test or favorable yeah. when the sample is introduced into Amiga's blood. So, I mean, it looks a little bleak for Amiga being sent to, I guess, you know, summer camp from hell.
Well, absolutely. We saw how difficult it is to get out of the vault last time we were there with the specimens a couple of episodes ago. So
Jax is the name. Specimen. Well, I couldn't. Are you from the Empire? Or something?
Well, they haven't given us the name of all three, so I didn't want to only remember Jax's name and not the other two characters.
He was the one that tried to escape.
He was the one that tried to escape. Yes. Okay.
And learned his lesson for
me. Yeah, well, absolutely. two days worth of isolation.
Yeah, but it's even the fact that you know the way that Dr. Hemlock refers to the vault as "Welcome to your new home to Amiga," and we know the other characters that were there were looking to get home, and that question had never been answered for them. How do I get home? All I want to do is go home. And Hemlock is introducing Amiga here, going, "This is your new home. Get in." I just thought that was a bit, again, devious and sinister.
Yeah, exactly.
Should we move on to the next blaster point, then, gentlemen?
Absolutely. Yes, blaster point number two: extraction from Erebus. So we cut back to the Bad Batch. They're back on Pabu. We had gone through every possible plan that they could have had to get off the planet and follow Amiga, and it turns out they weren't able to do anything at all before the Empire left. They are left alone on Pabu with no way of getting to Tantus to find Amiga. Until Crosshair comes up with a plan.
Yeah.
He's had something in his back pocket for a very long time, and he didn't want to use it to go back and save the other clones. But now that Amiga's back here, he's willing to share the last possibility, the last ditch effort.
Yeah, I like the frankness of Crosshair here to Hunter, you know, because it's like you got Wrecker and saying it out loud, certainly got Hunter thinking it, why didn't you say something sooner? Mm-hmm. And it's just, but I never wanted to go back to Tantus. And again, as I say, that's the mirror image where he's holding his hand in the same way that you had with Hemlock. Ultimately, he's saying, I wasn't able to get the tracker on effectively, so there is another possible way that we might get to know of the location of Tantus, which includes old Rampart.
Welcome back, Rampart.
It's a ramp on for Rampart.
Yeah, I must say I was not expecting to see this character back.
Nope.
And in some ways, am I pleased that he is? I mean, in a sense, yes, but he is a sniveling little sort of nasty piece of work, really.
He is.
But it would be interesting to see what happens, given that we have effectively, it takes the story into a prison break, and he's on the run from the Empire, so he's actually in a worse off position than before, just simply being a prisoner of the Empire,
absolutely.
Effectively, seemingly in some kind of, you know, pretty sort of off-grid prison.
Yeah.
Like, it was in the middle of nowhere. It's effectively a mining operation using slave labor or prisoner labor to do the work. So
how the mighty have fallen.
Absolutely.
And how they fall prior to Darth Vader being involved in the Empire, basically, because all that happens to him is he's sent off to a mine. He was an admiral beforehand. You know, had he disappointed Vader when Vader gets to power, choke, bye-bye, someone else takes your place, is the new order in the Empire. So maybe it was a good place for him to be. He didn't seem very happy there, being in a mine. That's not the greatest place in the world to be. But maybe he's endangered himself even more by going off the Bad Batch. But they are supported in their effort to get Rampart by the return of Fijinoa to help them out. And I love the little touch there. We've been joking about the fact that they really need to seal that cave, which has already allowed two quite major characters arrive on the planet in The Operative and Asajj Ventress. And now Fee goes, how did you get here under the radar? She goes, I just used the cave. You know, the cave that seems to have flashing lights on it saying, use this to avoid all detection.
But even the secret entrance.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, so basically, Pabu has more holes than a block of Swiss cheese, effectively, at this stage.
Yeah.
Well, especially after the bombardment, too.
Well,
the explosions is even more.
Yeah. Yeah.
Although it's relatively intact. It's not like it was like Mandalore.
It's not Mandalore level. They're going to go back there at the end of the season and they'll have that victory party with the Ewoks. Like we get with every good end of Star Wars show. There's a mini party and a celebration and.
Yeah.
At least it will still be standing. And that's, of course, because of the sacrifice of Omega in last episode, that they left it behind and left it reasonably intact. Yeah. Just unfortunately with no fishing gear and no ships to go fishing. That's not great.
No,
but they have to get Batcher as well. So they can't leave Batcher there.
Absolutely. But let's get on to Erebus itself as we meet up with Rampart here in the planet. Love this. It's all action. Difficult to describe on a podcast. You guys have seen the episode, of course, as well. But I did like some of the movements in here. I thought it was really fun as Wrecker takes on his favorite thing, which is just blow stuff up. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Let's go. Let's blow stuff up. And as they get onto the turbo tank, cross the bridge, against another turbo tank. Very cool.
The turbo tanks are pretty big. I mean, mm-hmm. Until the Bad Batch actually sort of grapple hooked their way onto it, I didn't think they were that big. Mm. I hadn't really got the scale of it. But they're actually really, really big and pretty tough, yes, given that as they're closing off the escape route, I mean, it's mm-hmm. just, it's going through the barricades.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's the wheels that are going through the barricades. Exactly. So this is a pretty tough tank, effectively. Yeah. I did also love the Stormtrooper gag as well as the Bad Batch sneak up on mm-hmm. where it's two of them going, it's quiet as usual. You know, I hope we see some action for our next posting. Yeah. And then bish, bash, bosh, they're both stunned and they're taken out. It's like, okay.
Yeah, there are a couple of great Stormtrooper gags. I love when the guys that are on the turbo tag try to investigate when the Batch climb on board, and then it just cuts to the driver and he hears the door open behind him and goes, was everything okay? And Wrecker goes, no, and punches him in the face. Like, it's perfect. Great fun.
Yeah, all clear.
No, and punches him in the face. It's great.
That felt a bit like Return of the Jedi, actually, mm-hmm. when Chewie gets on the AT-ST.
Absolutely, yeah.
So I like that.
For me, just you say we can't describe the action. Uh-huh. So far, we have bish, bash, bosh.
Yes.
And wallet bang. I think we're doing a good job as a podcast describing the action.
Pew, pew.
There was a bit of pew, pew, and a bish, bash, bosh. There you go.
But I also love that moment when they face off against the other turbo tank and they try to use all of their firepower. Wrecker, of course, manning the cannons, and they decide to take out the wheels instead, and then use the turbo tank as a ramp to get over it. It's awesome.
Yeah,
it's so cool.
Very cool. I love the look of all the mini missiles going off.
Yes,
like
cool.
It actually felt really unanimated.
Yes,
it was so good.
Yep, they filmed that. And then just stuck it in the show. it was really good. And then the cool Indiana Jones homage as they're traveling along the path across the cliff, the thin path, and the drop ships are following along behind them. And then, you know, it feels like there's fights on top of the tank and off the side of the tank. And then they have to escape to get onto Fee's ship. It just felt really Indiana Jones like. And I also love that, Crosshair takes out Rampart, uses the stun gun on Rampart, and for the rest of the episode while they're on the planet trying to escape, he's just treated like a rag doll. Yeah. Just picked up and thrown around left, right and center. Really good fun.
It looks amazing, and it looks like it hurt. Yeah. Like, he should have woken up with some bruises on his face.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Like, they should have just animated that, because when they yank him up onto the roof, like, it's drop, thud.
Yeah,
exactly.
And then when they literally barrel toss him onto the bridge of the ship, I was like, mm-hmm. oh, that, like, you forget, that thing is metal. It's a metal ship ramp. Like, that's going to hurt.
Absolutely.
And we do get a bit earlier as well, another plan. We have plan 55 as well, which was quite good to secure their target. in the form of Rampart.
Absolutely. When Crosshair turns around to Wrecker and goes, the doors are magnetically sealed. Do you remember Plan 55? And Wrecker goes, yeah, sure. You go first. It's like, I don't remember any plans unless it's just blow stuff up. You take the lead. I'll follow.
I prefer your interpretation of that. Okay. Mine was the fact that he uses the electromagnetic seal a bit like in the trash compactor on the Death Star to bounce his one shot to take out three of the five stormtroopers that are in there. So that might be why Wrecker was hanging back.
Right, okay.
If he goes in first,
he'll get shot.
He'll get hit by it.
I like it.
But I prefer the other. I like your comedy version.
It made me laugh. But I also think Wrecker provided lots of laughs in this episode. So I was enjoying his. But that shot is incredible from Crosshair. I don't want to take anything away from that. It takes out three people with one shot.
It's really good. And I must say, I love Rampart and Crosshair. You know, just the fact that he realizes he's the target and he's like, are you here to kill me? And he's like, no, but you know, it's tempting. And it gradually descends. As I say, as Rampart's kind of sneery, snivelly self-importance, even as a prisoner.
Yeah.
Like even in an imperial prison, he's not had his imperialness bashed out
not
of
at all. There's a personality trait that leads you to the Empire, I think.
You know, and so he clues it. I mean, he was an admiral, so he clues him pretty quickly that they need him, and so begins to bargain, you know?
So they knock him out and throw him around like a ragdoll.
Well, he's going for a blaster.
Yeah.
Although, one thing I'll say, we do talk in many episodes about how the Batch don't usually kill. Settings are stun only, usually.
Yeah.
Hunter flat out killed a stormtrooper in this one. He smashed a stormtrooper against a stone wall on the side of a tank. Literally, immovable object meets tank with a stormtrooper in the middle.
In between. Yep.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
His white uniform should have just been like a splatter of blood.
Oh, no.
And then, like, I was expecting something, and I was just like, okay, forgot this is a kid show.
Mm-hmm.
Any other show, that would have been a smear of stormtrooper on the wall.
Oh,
we do get a Wilhelm scream as well.
We do.
On this one.
Yeah. But it could have been like Hunter calling out, going, that's what you get for trying to replace us in our jobs. A call out to workers across the world. That's the extraction, really, from Erebus. We only have one more point, and I will admit, in a 17-minute episode, we are stretching it to three blaster points. So blaster point number three. Because the deal that Rampart makes is he won't tell them what the possible way to Tantus is until he's taken off the planet. That's why they do extract him from the planet. They were going to just get the information from him and leave him behind in the labor camp to deal with the repercussions, right? But they take him off the planet. When they get him up into Fee's ship and he wakes up, they find out actually he doesn't know the way to Tantus. Nobody does, and that's exactly how it was designed. There is some way around it. He knows he sent Nala Se to a place, and then she ended in Tantus, so potentially he has some way to get there. And this means Rampart is now an auxiliary member of the Bad Batch, sort of.
Yeah, we're in this together, he says.
Yeah.
Is this the way to Amatantis?
I love it.
Yeah, but that's it. In some ways, I kind of just enjoy the grovelly snivelliness of this character, but also the fact that, you know, he bargains with them to get them off planet, and yes, I'll tell you the way to Tantus, and then it's designed like that so that you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But there is potentially a way around this that we can do. So
exactly.
I'm with you for the long haul. I mean, the Bad Batch have effectively suddenly become babysitters for Rampart. Because I can imagine he's massively high maintenance.
Mm-hmm. With that load.
You know?
No, he is. I think the next episode is going to be that. Whatever this potential way in is. And then the final two is our finale. But I think how close will Crosshair get to shooting him again in that next episode is the one that's going to be, it's going to be Crosshair getting like ever so close to like just pointing a gun and like Hunter going, and then at the end, will they shoot Rampart? I think that, like, the comedic value of just that happening, or are we going to see like a Wrecker level kind of oopsie where Crosshair just kind of gets too angry middle of mission, shoots Rampart, and now it's just back to the batch being the batch, kind of having to get out of the situation. Because again, they don't have a great track record on missions. They get the mission done, but the plans never go to plan.
It's certainly getting better this season. If we were marking it the way we were scoring it back in season two, I think they've actually achieved most of their missions this season, and it's just still a surprise for us. Because here, the mission was to go and meet up with Rampart, and then they had a secondary mission to extract him from the planet. They achieved it.
True.
May not have been the best that they could have planned, but they did it. And earlier on in the season, same thing. While they've been looking for places, but the bigger goal of trying to find out a way to Tantus is still evading them as it stands right now. So I don't know why John still thinks Tantus is Amarillo, but because he's dancing here, fellow batteries, which is a bit odd and distracting. But that's the only other element that we need to talk about in the episode. Is there anything else that we haven't talked about, any moments that we haven't talked about, any things you wanted to bring up from the episode?
Nothing major for me. I just wanted to talk about that death count of the number of stormtroopers who died on that tank, just because a load of them fell off the side of the canyon, and then that one guy was patty-caked. I was just like, okay, we're getting to the end of the season. We're getting to the end of the series. And they're like, nah, it's fine. They can kill one or two stormtroopers. In the overall, their blood, the blood in their ledger is less than.
Absolutely.
It's okay.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Nothing from me.
The only other note I had from the episode is just because they're background characters, we only see them for a couple of seconds, and it may be absolutely nothing, but some of the other prisoners on Erebus looked slightly familiar. They may be the same species, but one looked a bit like Greedo, and one looked a little bit like the bounty hunter Bosk.
Okay, yeah.
So I'm just wondering, because the timeline, and this is just after Revenge of the Sith, as we know, and we're going to be going up into A New Hope where we meet Greedo, and we're going to be going up into Empire where we meet Bosk. Could the Bad Batch have just released two pretty desperate criminals from the planet in that breakout that were on this penal colony? Could it just be, you know, we finally get the backstory of Bosk in the future, and he goes, there was this one time I was captured by the Empire and some former clone troopers came in and freed me. Is that the backstory of Greedo and Bosk? That would be kind of funny, wouldn't it?
That would
I can 100% see that.
It's there for the taking.
Exactly. Yeah.
a little tale of the Empire story in the future. That could be it. But overall, what are your final thoughts on the Bad Batch 312 Juggernaut, Chris?
This was fine. It was fun. It was a quick episode. It had some ragdoll physics of cleverness. It moved the story along. I will be very quickly, brutally honest. You could have literally cut these two parts into and tacked them onto the last episode and the previous and the next. But I feel that they really want to make the next few episodes kind of, they don't want to do like, here's 3 40-minute episodes, but they could. But as a short, sharp shock of a story, it's fun. It's good. It's a batch doing what the batch do best, like creating a plan, not doing the plan and getting away with it. And we moved on and found out more kinda-ish about Project Necromancer.
Mm-hmm.
So again, just kind of keep bringing us that one step closer to what is happening on Tantus, which again, 3 episodes, we will know very soon, but it just kind of, it's feeding that insatiable appetite of story that I have. So overall, good, fine, great. Johnners, what about yourself?
Yeah, I really enjoyed this, you know, short, sharp and sweet. Give it 4 turbo tank tracks out of 5. I love the big kind of prison break element of this, which, you know, primarily an action sequence. It showed the Bad Batch off, and it was filled with some good gags. As I say, high body count, despite the first two stormtroopers being stunned, the rest, I think, weren't quite as lucky. I liked, just to see that Pabu seemed to come out of that Imperial sort of blitzkrieg relatively unscathed. Great to have feedback in there. And I really enjoyed Amiga arriving in Tantus. You know, that was the dark side of this episode for sure. And, you know, I actually, having Rampart back there, it you know, was good.
It was a nice surprise, wasn't it?
I was surprised to see him. You know, he came across as like a British colonial general if he'd been captured by, you know, still arrogant and all that.
Yeah.
It kind of was to a T, that imperialness of it.
Absolutely.
So I kind of just like the way that character is written, to be honest. But let's see if he can fulfill his end of the bargain. And let's see what Amiga gets up to in her new home. But Hemlock, I think like we were saying at the start, he just does chew up the scenery here. And the voice acting is just really great.
Yeah,
across everything, but in particular with Dr. Hemlock.
Mm-hmm.
Love Jimmy Simpson and just how he's done the voice acting for Hemlock.
I'd love to see him in live action playing that role.
Oh, absolutely.
As well.
It'd
be nice, nice twist on it. That'd be great.
So, 4 Turbo Tank tracks out of 5 for me. Derek, what did you think about this episode of The Bad Batch, Juggernaut?
A fun, exciting adventure and the kind of proper nail on the coffin of speculation about what Project Necromancer is about and what Amiga's part of it is. Thought that worked really well. We've all speculated. We all had ideas. We all roughly thought we knew what happened. I kind of like that Hemlock went, right, Omega, this is where you're part. Meet the rest of the puzzle. Off we go. This is how we continue on for the rest of the season. This is why you're important. So we know all that now. So ready for the final 3 episodes. Yeah. This is just a fun, exciting adventure, which I really enjoyed. We haven't had enough of those in the past. So good to have a prison break for that.
Excellent stuff. I think with that, it is time for a drink, a wee dram at the cantina with our Star Wars Bad Batch Cantina Quiz.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. We're ready for the 12th question in our Cantina Quiz for the Bad Batch.
Yes, we certainly are, fellow Batchers and fellow Quizzers. Here is question 12 from this season's Bad Batch Cantina Quiz. What species is Rampart's disagreeable labor camp mate on Erebus?
Ooh.
There you go. There is an easy way to find out the answer. I'm not giving you any clues, though. There you go. John's warned me against giving clues. So, not giving any clues, but there's an easy
Damn
way
boy.
To find you. Easy
Damn.
Way to find it. That's the 12th question in our Cantina Quiz of 15. Almost there. Just make sure you're gathering together all the correct answers. Email us at the end of the season to feedback@tvpodcastindustries.com with all your correct answers, and you could be in the chance of getting your hands on some Funko Pops of 5 members of the Bad Batch.
Hey. You have your own Bad Batch.
Exactly. John, do you want to get the question one more time?
Sure. What species is Rampart's disagreeable labor camp mate on Erebus?
Excellent. We have a little bit of feedback.
Yes, Dr. Bob Phillips says, The Great Escape. Trust the most English of the characters to be the rapscallion, though. I'm disappointed with Dr. Carr not pulling a sample switch and then letting Amiga be put in a nursery cell block H. More than Dr. Mengele himself in this episode. Have you all noticed how the look of Dr. Hemlock the Animated isn't that far removed from the historical figure? Ooh, interesting. No, I haven't actually checked, and my memory doesn't really recall what Dr. Mengele looks like from the concentration camps. Yeah, I'm going to have to check that out. I'll be intrigued because, it would be a great analogy, really.
I think have a look at a picture of them. Yeah, they both look like evil.
Well, yeah, I mean, people. Other than just sort of general evil, exactly.
Similar haircuts, similar style.
They did make him look like a mix between Mengele and Jimmy Simpson. Yeah. So I think it's to allow for live action.
Yeah.
Because there's definitely opportunity to put like live action into this era. And this character is an amazing opportunity. As long as he's not killed off in the final kind of episode, like down the side of a big chasm per se.
Yeah.
With electricity sparking around him, only to come back at later time.
Who knows? Through his own technology.
Yeah, exactly.
Somehow, Dr. Hemlock returned.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, and also, Dr. Bob, completely agree. You know, Dr. Carr, not really, not seemingly, maybe she's playing it ultra safe here because of the old prying eyes of Dr. Hemlock. But yeah, totally. I think Omega really sort of called it out there that Emery doesn't have to do this, but she doesn't seem to follow up on, I guess, her realization from last week, I don't think.
Yeah, but it's also the warning from Nalase, wasn't it? It was Nalase that said, I kept Omega safe. She has to be kept safe. Now the children will look to you. It was more of an instruction from Nalase, and Emery hasn't taken that on board just yet.
No, just yet.
Let's wait and see how it plays out with her for the rest of the season. But great stuff. Thanks so much, Dr. Bob.
Yeah, thanks, Dr. Bob.
Thanks, Dr. Bob. Always appreciative. Great to hear from your fellow Batchers. With that said and done, it is time for us to hyperdrive into a galaxy far, far away, as we will be getting back to you with episode 13, Into the Breach, on April 17th.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent stuff.
Until then, make sure you subscribe to TVPodcastIndustries.com to make sure you get all of our shows. We've just finished and wrapped up our coverage of season 2 of Invincible.
Mm-hmm.
Derek and I have to say, we loved it. Mm-hmm. But go back and listen and watch. It's definitely an adult show. If you're watching this with your kiddos, while it is animated, it's not an animated kid show. So know that. It's very much an adult animated one.
Yeah. Do you remember Chris was talking about the stormtroopers smashed against the wall? That would just be a streak of blood. That would be an Invincible.
Yes, exactly. That's Invincible. Yeah.
And the brains and everything would be left behind. Yes.
Yes. But if you want to go into the historical fiction, why not travel back to feudal Japan with our fellow podcast hosts, where they are literally going episode to episode through Shogun, the new one, not the original old one, because that's way too old of a podcast.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bit old, but the new one, and apparently, spoiler again, it's pretty darn good from what I hear.
It really is, absolutely. Come on over, fellow Batchers, and become fellow warriors.
Absolutely. You know, we got a bit of feedback in this week for the Shogun podcast from one of our awesome fellow warriors who just called the show a masterpiece on episode 8 of the series. And I have to agree, there really is nothing that I can complain about, but loads to discuss and loads to speculate on. Loads of twists and turns in that show has been really exciting to cover as our 10th anniversary podcast. And we only have 2 more episodes to go. 2 more weeks of Shogun. How's it going to end? How's it going to end? Come find out along with us over on TV Podcast Industries. But for the Bad Batch, thanks so much for joining us for this episode. And remember, any friend of Brown Eyes is a friend of ours.
Indeed.
Always.
Brown eyes burning like fire.
That's not how that goes.
Thanks so much, and speak to you again next week.
Bye.
Yes, thank you so much, fellow Batchers, for joining us until episode 13. Keep watching, keep listening, and of course, keep being bad.
Bye.
Bye.
This is the way to Amatantis.
And then the cool Indiana Jones type homage as the dropships are flying alongside the tank and it's traveling along the really thin path that felt really something from Lucasfilm. Good God, man, I'll never get through a sentence.
he's taking up the trombone, the trumpet.
I was halfway through the sentence, not all we heard.
I couldn't hold it.
Totally fine.
No, it's fine. Just sounded like
the 12:15 from Chester had just gone, just blown through the station.
Trumpet, Praxis.
Whoa.